Radio Prague News.
Ex-President Václav Havel is one of the signatories of an open letter to the US President warning about the dangers of Washington's warmer relations with Moscow. Airlines have started to check Canada-bound checks for valid visas. And the Czech National Bank has objected to EU-wide proposals aimed at stepping up supervision of financial markets. Former Czech President Václav Havel and former Foreign Minister Karel Schwarzenberg are among the signatories of an open letter that has been prepared for President Barack Obama. The letter, signed by other former political heavyweights and intellectuals in Central and Eastern Europe, calls for Washington not to ignore the region as the prize for improved relations with Moscow. Former European Affairs Minister Alexander Vondra told the Czech daily paper Lidové noviny that Obama is looking for quick results and improved relations with Russia, and that could be at the expense of former Soviet bloc countries. The letter warns that a total renunciation of US plans for an anti-radar system in the Czech Republic and Poland, or Russian involvement in them, would undermine trust in the US. Mr. Vondra is due to deliver the letter to US leaders in Washington. Airlines at Prague Airport started checking Canada-bound Czech passengers on Thursday to make sure that they have the required visas for entry into the country. Canada announced the re-imposition of visas for Czechs on Tuesday, but allowed visa demands at its frontiers for the first 48 hours. Some of the Czechs flying out on Thursday complained about the last-minute stress they have been exposed to. Many have been forced to seek visas at the Canadian Embassy in Vienna. Two applicants of the around 200 dealt with there during the first 2 days were refused visas, according to official reports. The Canadian move has been sparked by a surge of Czech asylum applications, mostly from the Roma community. Staying with the visa story, Czech Minister for Human Rights and Minorities, Michal Kocáb, has cleared up some of the apparent surprise and confusion in Prague over the Canadian move. Mr. Kocáb said that Ottawa notified at the end of June that visas would be introduced on July the 7th. However, when the move was postponed for a week, this was taken as a victory for Czech and EU diplomacy. The explanation that this was only a temporary postponement somehow did not get through. The Czech National Bank has attacked the proposed reinforcement of supervision of financial markets agreed by EU leaders at the start of June. The proposal called for two entirely new Europe-wide bodies to improve regulation and supervision of financial markets. The Czech Central Bank said on its webpage on Thursday that the proposals weakened national supervision, whose independence should not be undermined. It added that proposals do not solve fragmented supervision in some countries and do not at all address the causes of the current financial crisis. It also complained that the proposals are still very vague. The National Bank was asked to comment by the European Commission before EU leaders agreed on an outline of the new rules. The weather, the outlook is for more showers and storms. Maximum daytime temperatures are unlikely to rise above 21 degrees Celsius. I'm Chris Johnston, and that was the news.
Hello, this is Radio Prague, and I'm Ian Willoughby. Welcome to the programme. Today, Václav Havel and others call on President Barack Obama not to abandon Central and Eastern Europe in the interests of better relations with Russia. Thanks to wet weather, rare truffles appear in the Czech Republic. And we look back at one of the most important dates in Czech history, November 17th, 1989, in this week's From the Archives. Then later in the program, we travel to the Congo to see the work of a Czech NGO helping the local people.
These women have been held as sexual slaves by the Hutus. So I found them living there in terrible conditions, nothing to eat, no proper shelter.
All that's coming up, so please don't go away. Former Czech President Václav Havel has joined around 20 other influential figures from Central and Eastern Europe in writing an open letter to US President Barack Obama, appealing to him not to abandon the region in the interest of forming better relations with Russia. In the letter published on Thursday, They urge Mr. Obama to boost American involvement in Europe's security and resist what they call Russia's creeping intimidation. Rob Cameron has been reading the letter. Rob, what exactly is in it?
Well, I'll sum it up in brief. It's more than 10 pages long, but in essence, they make this plea for the United States not to ignore or even abandon its allies in Central and Eastern Europe at a time when Russia appears to be keen to reassert its influence in the region, which was once, of course, its own backyard. The signatories say they remain deeply indebted to America for its role in bringing about the end of communism, and they are profoundly pro-American in outlook, but they very delicately remind President Obama that it works both ways, pointing out that soldiers from the region fight alongside American soldiers in places like Iraq and Afghanistan, often in forces which may appear tiny in comparison to countries like Britain, but still those contributions represent a significant sacrifice, both in terms of manpower and money. And against all that, they're worried that Washington is slowly turning its back on the region as it attempts to improve ties with much larger countries elsewhere, in particular Russia.
Do Mr. Havel and co. make any concrete proposals for changes in American foreign policy?
They do, yes. So they want President Obama to show a greater commitment to NATO's regional role. They want more commitment on things such as the missile defense scheme. They want the US to ignore Russia's objections to that scheme, because Mr. Obama, of course, seems at least to be putting missile defense on the back burner in a bid to improve military ties with Russia. They want the US to support efforts to reduce Europe's reliance on Russian energy, such as greater support for the Nabucco pipelines. It's really about resisting Russian protests. They describe Russia as a revisionist power pursuing a 19th century agenda with 21st century tactics and methods, and say that the danger is that Russia's creeping intimidation and influence peddling in the region could over time lead to a de facto neutralization of this region. So that's what they say.
And briefly, Rob, what has been the reaction, if there's been any at all?
Well, none yet from the White House. Perhaps that's because the president is still reading it. But it has been welcomed in Prague, at least. The newspaper Lidové Noviny said it was very important to counter views like that expressed by the Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov, who recently publicly argued with the Czech Foreign Minister at a press conference over whether or not countries like the Czech Republic and Poland were part of Eastern Europe or Central Europe. But The Economist, which is, of course, one of the world's most influential publications, in a comment on its website, said that the letter risked sounding plaintive and naive, pointing out that Russia no longer poses a threat to the United States, and quoting an unnamed American official as summing up such pleas for greater US support in the region as follows. They're asking us, in principle, to risk World War III in their defense, and if their countries stand for organized crime and economic collapse, that's a hard sell.
Okay, we'll have to leave it there. Thank you, Rob Cameron. Moving on to matters culinary, and truffles are a great delicacy, held in high esteem in French, Istrian and Northern Italian cooking, as well as international haute cuisine. Here in the Czech Republic, edible truffles are extremely rare, or at least they have been extremely rare in the past. But now, thanks to changes in temperature and humidity, truffles have been discovered in Moravia. Jan Wellinger has the story.
Truffles are native to areas around the Mediterranean, Croatia, Italy and France, and can cost up to 30,000 crowns, more than $1,000 per kilo. Surprisingly, the rare tubers have now been uncovered in the Czech Republic. Mycologist Jiří Polčák, who has long set his sights on uncovering samples, proved successful recently, an event that made headlines in the Czech papers. The location? Well, he's not saying, but he did reveal it was an oak grove somewhere in central Moravia. When I spoke to him over the phone, he explained that conditions this year were ideal for the rare fungus.
We've seen perfect conditions for truffles, warm temperatures and humidity, perfect for summer truffles. Without question, summer truffles are very rare in the Czech Republic, found before in only very few areas. About a month ago, I found my first sample. In a way, it was unbelievable. People searched for truffles in the area for years without any luck. The ones I found were already partly uncovered.
In the Czech Republic, the fungus is so rare it is protected by law. Uprooting truffles can land offenders heavier fines. One thing, though, is certain. Jiří Polčák's discovery won't make it onto any dining room tables. Still, the specialist says he has no regrets.
Především tím, že je to takzvaná podzemka, to znamená, že roste pod zemí.
They're among the world's most sought-after delicacies, and it's true that truffles are incomparable to any mushroom. But I myself am perfectly happy just to have made the find. It may be the northernmost find in Europe. I'm happy just to be able to photograph samples and to see them develop. I don't need to eat them.
Jiří Polčák, the mycologist who found truffles in Moravia, and he was speaking to Jan Wellinger. If you've just joined us, thanks for doing so. This is Radio Prague. I'm Ian Willoughby. Now, David Vaughan returns to a key date in the history of the Czech Republic, the 17th of November, 1989. That's in this week's From the Archives.
The 17th of November 1989 did not begin dramatically. It was the 50th anniversary of the execution of 9 Prague students who had led protests in 1939 against the German occupation. Various officially sanctioned commemorations were taking place, and the centre of Prague was filled with students.
Kde jinde začít informaci o 17. listopadu 1989 než ve staroslavném Karolínu. Historická aula univerzity Karolínu.
Czechoslovak radio reported from the official ceremony in the morning at Charles University, where, as always on these occasions, it was the Socialist Youth Union that took center stage. But this was just a week after the fall of the Berlin Wall, and change was in the air.
Pod večer se pak přišly stovky chlapců a děvčat s kytkou a zapálenou svíčkou v ruce poklonit památce Jana Opletala do míst, kde v roce 1939 šel pohřební průvod jeho rakví.
Shromáždění a průvod. In the afternoon, thousands of students carrying flowers and candles joined a march along the route taken by the funeral procession of Jan Opletal, who had been shot and killed during the protests back in 1939. Again, Czechoslovak radio gave the impression that nothing out of the ordinary was happening.
Shromáždění a průvod uspořádala Pražská městská vysokoškolská rada.
But then the newsreader added one further sentence.
Podle posledních informací se slavnostních okamžiků pokoušejí někteří lidé zneužít k protisocialistickým provokacím.
Reports are coming in that certain people are attempting to abuse this solemn occasion for anti-socialist provocations. The certain people were in fact many thousands of students who had continued their peaceful march into the centre of Prague. Calling for democratic reform, they ended up in the street Národní třída, which links the National Theatre to Wenceslas Square. There they were stopped, and riot police broke up the demonstration with unprecedented force. The next day, Czechoslovak radio, at the time still firmly in the hands of the regime, reported that 17 protesters and 7 policemen had been injured. Its report continued.
Už v průběhu této akce byly snahy učinit z ní demonstrativní vystoupení proti socialistickému společenskému zřízení.
In the course of the event, there were attempts to turn it into a demonstration against the socialist system, the Communist Party of Czechoslovakia and the government. This was confirmed as the situation developed, and in the evening the crowd, on the instigation of various people, headed towards the city centre. Peace and public order were breached. After repeated appeals, some of the people went away, but around 2,000 continued to demonstrate and behaved increasingly aggressively. In order to reinstate peace and order, police riot units were employed.
Obnovení pořádku a klidu zakročily pořádkové jednotky veřejné bezpečnosti.
As we can hear, Czechoslovak radio was not at the vanguard of the Velvet Revolution, and in the first dramatic days was broadcasting only the official version of events. But by November the 19th, with demonstrations in the streets continuing, A distinct shift in the radio's reporting could be detected.
Václavské náměstí bylo ještě v 17 hodin zaplněno, těžko odhadovat, ale...
At 5 in the afternoon, Wenceslas Square was filled with people. It's hard to say, but I probably wouldn't be exaggerating if I said there were around 100,000 people here, mostly young people and children, but all generations were here. The participants were shouting slogans, discussing in groups. Their shouts and banners displayed their dissatisfaction. They were calling for political pluralism, free elections, dialogue and radical reforms.
Svobodné volby, skutečný dialog a radikální reformy.
The language of this report contrasts dramatically with what the radio had previously been broadcasting. By now it was clear that major change was underway, even in Czechoslovak radio.
That was From the Archives by David Vaughan. In a moment, this week's panorama, but first, some music. Nessun Dorma, as performed by the Welsh tenor Paul Potts. Potts came to fame after winning the TV talent contest Britain's Got Talent 2 years ago, and he's now set to appear in the Czech Republic for the first time ever during the Prague Proms Music Festival. The Prague Proms gets underway at the Municipal House on Friday night with a selection of works by Antonín Dvořák, performed by the Czech National Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Libor Pešek. As well as purely classical performances, the organisers have incorporated other elements into this year's festival, including jazz, with one of the 8 Proms concerts set to feature the Norwegian vocalist Silje Nergard, backed by the Czech National Symphony Orchestra. For more information, go to prague-proms.cz. But for now, here's a little of Silje Nergard. This is Based on 1,000 True Stories.
I can see that all the signs I made myself believe I hadn't seen are what hurt us, he said. There was no way of knowing. I wrote a play to fit the screen. Put our love and names up there in line.
Silje Nergard, which I'm sure I'm saying wrong, and she'll be performing at the Prague Proms Festival next Tuesday. Now, as promised, here's Christian Falvey with this week's panorama, which could well be the first report Radio Prague has ever done in Africa.
Czechs are working in crisis spots around the globe, predominantly through the charity foundation People in Need. One of the places most sorely in need of that aid is the Democratic Republic of Congo, whose eastern conflict was largely unknown in the Czech Republic until a few people who thought they could help came in and started doing so. Think the perfect climate, lushness, and unending mineral wealth, unlimited war, mass rape, and slave labor. The Congo leads the world in both regards. Wherever you go in this place of exoticism and hardship, you hear the deeply stirring sound of song. The work of People in Need began in a place called Bunyakiri, a territory of jungle and towering mountains. Marketa Kutilova came to the place as a journalist and left a humanitarian worker.
The first time I arrived here, I was really, really, really shocked. I found here Catholic Sister Clotilde, who is taking care of rape survivors for 10 years. She's almost the only one in whole region, which is 120,000 people, who is taking care of these women. But more or less, she has no material assistance for them. So she always only provided them some kind of moral support and psychological support. And she let the women to stay in her own place. So when I arrived, I found 20 women living in terrible conditions with their children. These women have been held as sexual slaves by the Hutus, and because of this, there is a huge stigma. surrounding them. They are called by the community Hutu women, and the community refused them, as did their husbands. So these women stay abandoned with their children. They didn't know where to go, so they went to Clotilde. So I found them living there in terrible conditions, nothing to eat, no proper shelter. Their children didn't go to school. They never got any medical assistance, nothing. So I was really shocked.
Since Sister Clotilde first began aiding the rape survivors, she has registered 1,648 victims of sexual violence in Bunyakiri. They are not all women. Among them are children as young as 2 years old, and many men as well. It is often said that rape is not about sex, but about control. In the context of the war in eastern Congo, however, it goes even beyond that, existing as a means of achieving not only personal but societal destruction. Brandy Walker is an American working at Panzi Hospital in eastern Congo, the only major hospital for the treatment of victims of sexual violence and one of the main partners of people in need.
Rape here is a weapon of war. It's used here not to just destroy the women, but to actually destroy entire families and entire communities. The rapes often don't occur in private. We've heard a number of cases where communities have been brought out at gunpoint and forced to watch the women being raped. And this traumatizes not just the women, but families and larger communities who then have to deal with this trauma for many years to come. So absolutely the women, but I think the plan is much larger than that. It's an attempt to destroy and break apart communities.
Putting aside for a moment all that brought about the deeply troubled Congo, namely colonization and foreign intrigue, what pains this African country, the size of Western Europe, is at heart an endless war over rocks. For in terms of mineral wealth, the Democratic Republic of Congo is the richest country in the world. The conflict is a direct continuation of the 1994 Rwandan genocide, after which the culpable Hutu militias fled to neighboring Congo and dug into the infinite jungle. There they were pursued by Rwandan Tutsi militias who have in turn been at odds over the years with the native Congolese army, all of which has given rise to various minor insurgencies, such as that of Laurent Nkunda. What all of the armies on this battlefield have done is taken some of the mined resources for themselves, forced the locals into servitude, the children into battle, and the women into sexual slavery. It was the latter crime that brought in people in need. The scale of sexual violence in Congo is believed to be unprecedented, with as many as 200,000 rape victims in the country today.
We see a couple of different things with the rebel groups. They will come in and attack the villages, plunder the villages, and in the process rape the women. Another instance is rebel groups will come in and will attempt to drive the villagers out, and in doing so they rape the women to instill terror so that the women don't return. In the first case that I mentioned, what often happens is that the rebel groups, they don't kill the women and they don't kill the villagers because they need the villagers there to grow the crops, to provide the infrastructure so that they can continue to thrive. They need them there to run the local economy and to supply the rebel groups.
The first step to take was to ensure immediate aid for the victims. The psychological and physical consequences of rape as an implement of war make an appallingly long list. Victims often suffer from fistula, the opening of the intestinal and genital passages into a single cavity, and younger victims are left mentally handicapped by trauma. People in need first set out to create a system of immediate medical aid. Once that was in place, the focus could shift to the fact that many of the victims had no homes and no livelihood. A tract of land was purchased in Bunyakiri, and houses were built for the victims of sexual violence who had been abandoned by their communities and their husbands. One of the local men working with people in need showed me around what is an entire village created with Czech funds and initiative, and introduced me to its inhabitants.
Jumbo.
Jumbo sana.
These houses were built by people
by,
in need?
By people in need.
All of these houses?
All of them.
How many houses? For how many people?
26 houses. We have 26 family here. Balijenga tu wakusaidia ba mama. Balisaidia ka ba mama baka bajenga donki binya bajiwezi binya bana babwana. People need had built this house because we haven't house and we haven't no husband and they was ripped. Tunafurahi tuko na nyumba, mimi hatuna. Benge tuko zinala. We say thank you because we didn't have a house. And we stay very well, that we say thank you for people in need. But after that, we continue to need how what to eat. The children needs clothes. It isn't easy to find a clothes for them, and it is difficult to find to eat every day, food and money for the school.
Incentive and even money means a lot, but it isn't everything. Critical to the success of any endeavor in Bunyakiri or anywhere else is self-sustainability. To that end, the People in Need Foundation began a program of education, not only providing goats, but teaching the villagers to breed them, not only providing clothes, but the means to make them, in an effort to bring together a functioning society here. Sister Clotilde spoke to me of what the Czech charity has brought her and her women, and what it has meant to them.
First, they started a microcredit project which aided 27 female survivors of rape, and they supported the schooling of their children. They also, in the microcredit program, helped the women to buy livestock, cattle. They've also helped the women to have vocational training in making soap and sewing and embroidery, and this has aided them in the reintegration process. People in Need is like a star that has just shined in the middle of the night for them.
That edition of Panorama by Christian Falvey takes us to the end of today's program on Radio Prague. From myself, Ian Willoughby, and all the team here in Prague, thank you very much for listening. Goodbye.
Hilly, I guess I am a boy, and we say, Savamugela boy, give up, Hilly, I guess I am a boy, and we say, Kutua, Ozayo, Moyo, Salana, Tiba, say, Savamugela boy, give up, Hilly, I guess I am a boy, and we say, Hilly, I guess I am a boy, and we say,